wonderful to be here tonight to chat with you for a little bit. I am just one member of the genetics trio that they have on tap for you tonight. So with that in mind, I will keep my comments as short as possible while still answering any questions that you may have. So Paul mentioned that I actually work for Angus Genetics Incorporated, and some of you may not have heard of that, so I thought I'd put up this slide to give you a picture of where that fits in with the American Angus Association. So we are just one of the four subsidiaries. Certified Angus Beef, of course, is the one most of you would have heard of. Then we have the Angus Foundation, who raises money for education, youth, lots of scholarships, and also research. So we depend on them a lot for our funding for some of the research that we do at the Angus Association. API, they put out the Angus Journal, the Angus Beef Bulletin. I see Casey and Troy with the Angus Journal back there. So thanks for coming, guys. I appreciate that. So AGI, what do we do? What is our job? Our mission is to provide service to the beef industry by developing selection tools to genetically improve the cattle. So not just Angus cattle, but the beef industry as a whole. And so I'm going to guide you through some of those tools that we have on tap, and then I'll turn the microphone over to let the others pick up and go where I leave off. I always like to start with this. We're talking about some really exciting new genomic technology and some awesome things that are happening in that regard in the industry today. But I can't emphasize enough to you, performance information has always been important. It was the foundation of this breed. Any of you remember when the first Angus cattle were imported? You remember that? I was just checking. Okay, I thought, making sure none of you raised your hands, because I was going to comment about how great you look for your age if you remember that. But from the very beginnings when Angus cattle were imported, they were brought in to improve the native cattle, the longhorns, and add that the quality and the maternal traits and things like that. And so we still hold that as important, that performance foundation. One of the reasons I think we've been so successful is Angus breeders over the years have been relentless in collecting this performance information and submitting it to develop these selection tools. So I just wanted to give you a picture of this. Last year, this is the end of 2013, there were almost 8.2 million weaning weight records running around in our database that contribute to those EPDs that come out every week. So some very, very important information. We have about 17.3 million pedigrees that go into the EPDs every week. 22 million other types of records, whether that's carcass data, calving records, heifer pregnancy records, carcass data, things of that nature. We crank out about 62 million EPDs. And really, really exciting to me, and this number has actually gone up. I did not correct my slides today, but last week we went over the 50,000 mark. So we have 50,000 high-density genomic tests going into the EPDs every week as well. So it's made it an extremely powerful resource, not only for Angus breeders to make genetic improvement, but also for commercial cattlemen. If you are using Angus genetics, it puts those tools in your pocket as well. So we talk about selection tools, and we've come a ways over the years, haven't you? Or haven't we, I should say. And if we think back to the very beginning of time when we first started selecting cattle for beef production, we didn't have much to go on but this, right? Kind of the eye, and that's what we had. And we fast forward in time a little bit, and we start taking those weights and measurements that I talked about. We start having some bull tests and comparing animals. And then we get into the early 80s and we have expected progeny differences. Computing technology and statistics advanced to the point that we could do that on a breed-wide level. These days, a lot of you use our dollar value indexes, whether that's dollar W or dollar B. So those bioeconomic indexes were another step forward. And today, we are using the animal's own DNA, so pulling a sample from that animal, extracting the DNA from it, using that information held within its genomic information to make predictions about its genetic worth as a parent for the various traits that you may be interested in. So we've come a long ways, but I want to emphasize, as we've come this long ways, we still haven't really kicked anything out of our toolbox, have we? We have bioeconomic indexes and genomics now. We're still using EPDs. In fact, let me tell you the punchline right now. If you're using Angus genetics and you can use an EPD, you're using genomics. Okay, that's all you need to know about genomics. And we're still collecting performance data. That will always be very important. I think Kent will emphasize that here in a minute when we get up, when we get to that point as well. So here is a Angus pedigree. You see the bull's name up there, birth date, all of the information about what we've done with that animal's DNA. This bull's parentage has been verified with DNA. It's also had all of the various genomic tests that have gone in and are influencing his EPDs each week. We are currently the only breed that releases new EPDs every week. Some of you may be in the club that sit by your computer on Friday morning and wait for those to come out. If you're in that club, you're probably especially excited about what's going to happen this Friday morning, and I'll tell you more about that here in just a minute. But as you can see, I pulled these off fresh this afternoon. So every piece of information we have about that bull, it's fresh, it's current, and everything we know about him currently are in his EPDs. If it's been a while since you've looked at one of these summaries, the EPDs are organized in three different groups. So we call the first, those on the top line on the left, we call those the production EPDs. So those are things like calving ease, birth weight, weaning, yearling. How many of you have seen RADG? RADG. How many of you use it? How many of you don't have a clue what it is or what it stands for? Okay. That's a relatively, in terms of, you know, age of EPDs, it's a relatively new one. It's a feed efficiency EPD. It stands for residual average daily gain. Okay. So it's measured in pounds of gain per day, average daily gain, but it's assuming those cattle eat the same amount. So eating the same amount, who gains more? That's the more efficient animal, right? So RADG, feed efficiency EPD. Yearling height, scrotal circumference, docility, got a whole suite of maternal traits over on the far right of the screen there, starting with heifer pregnancy, which I'll talk about with you in just a minute. Calving ease, maternal. A lot of you may look at milk, and I'm guessing in this part of the country you tend to moderate that compared to some other parts of the country. And then down at the bottom would be all of the Cartman's traits, okay? And the very, very bottom are the dollar indexes, which we'll talk about here in just a minute. So if any of you have any burning questions about any of those EPDs as we make our way through here, please ask. I don't want you to leave wondering about any of those tonight. This is a cool table, and it may not be cool to you, but I'm a genetics nerd, and it's very cool to me. This is genetic trend over time for various growth traits. Okay, so the orange bar there is weaning weight. Okay, the green is yearling weight. This color here, black, is mature cow weight. And then red would be birth weight. Okay, now if any of you know anything about the correlation between these traits, these lines are not doing what they're supposed to do. Okay, if we take weaning weight, for instance, and birth weight, there is a strong positive correlation between those two traits, meaning the slope of those two lines should be doing the same thing. As we selected over time for heavier calves at weaning, birth weight should have skyrocketed. Okay, and because we have genetic selection tools like EPDs, we've been able to find those unique bulls who offer that explosive weaning growth but still have the moderate birth weight. It's a cool thing that could not possibly have been done using phenotype alone. We had to have genetic selection tools to do that. Another one that I think is neat, if we look at yearling weight and mature cow weight, there's a strong positive correlation between those two traits. And I will grant you, mature cow sizes are bigger now than they used to be. But based on the trend for yearling weight, they should be a lot bigger. Okay, so having that mature cow weight EPD to help keep the mature cow weight moderate while still having that yearling growth has been another valuable selection tool. Here's a cool EPD, and I've talked to enough folks that sometimes they get the calving ease EPDs confused, and so I always like to bring those up and make sure we're clear about the appropriate time to use which calving ease EPD. Okay, so on the far left-hand side, when you look at a set of EPDs, is calving ease direct, CED. And then the first one in the maternal traits is CEM, calving ease maternal. Both of these EPDs are expressed in percent of unassisted births. Percent unassisted births. So do you want it bigger or littler? Do you want, yes, we want more unassisted births. Yes, no, how many of you like pulling calves? Okay, no hands went up. All right, so bigger numbers are better. All right, so calving ease direct. Bull A and Bull B, we're expecting 7% more unassisted births from Bull A compared to Bull B. When? When you breed those bulls to first calf heifers. Okay? So calving ease direct is the EPD that you use when you are going to choose a bull that you are going to breed to heifers. Okay, so what's the difference with calving ease maternal? It's interpreted the same way. But this is the EPD that you use when you are buying a bull to sire your replacement heifers. It's unassisted births in his daughters as first calf heifers. So we're a generation away, if that makes sense. Okay, so CED, if you're buying a heifer bull, okay, to breed to first calf heifers. CEM, if you're buying your bull to sire your replacement heifers. Make sense? Now, do EPDs work? Does anybody in here think EPDs don't work? Oh, hallelujah. I always have at least one doubter in a crowd. So either you're embarrassed or you guys are just well-educated and wise on these things up here. We had an intern this summer at AGI. Her name's Heather Bradford. She's working on her PhD, just started at Kansas State University. And we loved having her, and she did some great things for us. You'll actually see some of, if you take the Angus Journal, she's written a couple pieces for them. So we had her go back through our database and pull out calving scores before we had calving ease EPDs and after. Okay, so the red bars would be calving scores before we had calving ease EPDs. So we were, in other words, just using birth weight EPD was the only thing we had to go on there. The blue bars are after we had calving ease EPDs and breeders started to use them. One means no assistance. Okay, so before we had calving ease EPDs, almost 93% of Angus heifers were calving unassisted. After we developed the calving ease EPDs and folks started to use them, now 96% of Angus heifers are calving unassisted. Okay, more important to me, threes and fours are the hard pulls, right? Those are ones you definitely don't want. 1.8%, almost 2%. Were threes and fours before calving ease EPDs, and afterwards we've cut that in half. It's less than a percent now. So EPDs work, and I'm encouraged that people use them, and I think that's cool information. It also tells a good story about calving triple and Angus heifers. We don't have a whole lot of it, do we? But we expect that from the breed. So anybody have any specific questions with regard to any of the EPDs before I roll on and talk about indexes? And I'll be here all week, so if you think of something, come chat with me. I'm happy to answer anything. Down at the bottom are dollar value indexes. Those are our bioeconomic indexes. So it takes not only the performance part of that, but also puts some economic assumptions to those, so they are interpreted in dollars and cents. Very easy to interpret. The bad news for us is they're sort of complicated to develop, but they're really easy for y'all. And this was sort of the reason why the dollar indexes were developed. So, will you all agree with me that outputs, what you're selling, what you're putting out, create revenue for your operation? Is that true? Okay. Your inputs create expense. Is this true? This is true. Okay. Which of those four pieces do our classic EPDs that we just talked about, for the most part, which do they focus on? They kind of focus on that little piece right there, don't they? Okay, but when it comes to actual profitability, we have some other things we need to take into account. And so that's where the dollar indexes come into account. We know something about outputs because of EPDs and some input EPDs as well. And we can make economic assumptions based on watching trends over time and things of that nature. So they are computationally rigorous, I think would be the best way to put it. Okay, but as I mentioned, they're dollars and cents, so more dollars is better, I hope, okay? More dollars is better. All right? And so example, dollar W would be an example. Dollar B is probably the one that gets talked about the most. I like to start with talking about dollar W, though, because I think it may be one of the more underutilized dollar indexes, excuse me. So it takes into account all of the economic impacts associated with birth, weaning, and that growth to weaning weight. It takes into account that, you know, if you have a heavier milking cow, okay, she's probably going to have a heavier calf, but it costs something to keep her, right? We know mature cows, a larger mature cow should wean you a heavier calf, but it costs something in feed resources to keep that larger mature cow around. And so all of those things are accounted for in dollar W. So I would submit to you that if you're a commercial producer selling your calves at weaning, maybe retaining some replacement heifers, you may want to take a pretty close look at dollar W. Okay, that might be more important to you when you're making your bull buying decision than some of the others. The one that gets talked about a lot is dollar B, but I'll set up the two components of that first. Dollar F is the feedlot value index. Okay, so it takes into account all the costs, all the benefits of getting that animal through the feed yard. Okay, the other piece is the grid value. So that takes into account all of the values and costs associated with hanging up a high quality carcass on a grid. Okay, so the dollar F and dollar G components are actually what feed in to give us dollar B. Okay, so it's very important. I love dollar B. We've seen some studies done with focusing on dollar B, and it's remarkable the progress that can be made with dollar B. But don't forget, if you're not following your cattle through the feed yard and selling them on a grid, okay, having a high dollar B and not looking at dollar W may not be getting you what you think it's getting you. I think a lot of people look at it because it's the one on the far right, and they think it takes into account everything from beginning to end, when, as a matter of fact, dollar B is just post-weaning on, okay, if that makes sense. Still really valuable. I still really like it. I'm not trying to put it down. I'm just trying to moderate your expectations with regard to that just a little bit. Okay, so I've talked about how to use EPD, so I kind of put the cart before the horse there. What is an EPD? Anybody want to tell me what it is or give me a definition of it? Somebody said it stands for expected profit. Yeah, it's a thing. You're like, I don't know what it is. I just know it works. I know how to use it, okay? Let me tell you a kind of simple definition, okay? EPDs are our best estimate of an animal's genetic worth as a parent. Okay, our best estimate of an animal's genetic worth as a parent. Notice I said estimate, okay? And so an estimate is only as good as the quantity and quality of information going into that. And so these are what go into an EPD. The first thing that goes into an EPD is pedigree. Okay, why would we take into account pedigree? Well, you get half your DNA from the sire side and half from the dam side. Okay, and that's a pedigree estimate EPD. We take half the sire's EPD, half the dam's EPD, add them together, and you have a pedigree estimate EPD. Okay, how many of you have brothers and sisters? How many of you are identical to your brother and sister? Yeah, okay? So, yeah, we get half our DNA from mom and half from dad, but which half? Okay? In theory, full siblings can have exactly 0% of their DNA in common. Okay? So, in other words, to have a good idea of what an animal's genetic worth is as a parent, we need some more information. And so this is where that performance data I talked about earlier comes in. It's crucially important. You take their own birth weights, your own weaning weights on that animal. And that goes into the EPD. It probably moves a little bit, but the accuracy, the number under the EPD, will go up. Okay? When do we really know and have a really great grasp of what an animal's genetic worth is as a parent? When do you know that? Yeah, it's usually, unfortunately, after it's dead. Yes, in the old days, okay? But it's when they have a boatload of calves, right? Okay? That's why the only animals you ever see to get like the 0.8 and 0.9 accuracies are the widely used AI sires. They have a boat ton of calves on the ground, and we know what they're going to do. Okay? So progeny information, crucially important. Performance information on calves of sires and dams. That goes into the EPD. The problem, or not really a problem, it's just been a limitation, is that for some traits, it can take, like you said, forever to get that information. Okay, think about the carcass EPDs. How old is a bull before he has any carcass progeny at all? Okay, he's got to be old enough to reproduce. He actually has to have some carcass information submitted on his progeny. So we're a few years down the road, right? That was my timer. I set it so that I need to hush pretty soon. I set it short, though, so we have time for questions. So think about the maternal EPDs. How long till you have any information about a bull's daughters for heifer pregnancy or calvinies or things like that? We're a ways down the road. How about feed intake? Goes into the RADG, the feed efficiency EPD. It costs a lot of money to get individual feed intake information. It's important. We really need it. But there's some limitations there. And so this is where the genomics piece is really, really exciting. Our research and development partners are Zoetis. And so they have helped us develop the algorithm or the mathematics about how the genomics goes into the EPDs and how much it affects those. We also work with another company, GeneSeq. They're a genotyping lab. So we do get genotypes from them that go in each week. So from the labs, you send a sample, whether it's a hair sample or a blood sample from an animal. They extract the DNA from that sample, and they genotype it. And when I say genotype, they just find out if it's an A, a T, a G, or a C, those building blocks of DNA. They find out what that animal is across about 50,000 different DNA markers. Okay? And they send those to us, and we know what each of those markers are worth. And so we put them through an algorithm, and then they go into the EPDs each week along with all of that other information, the pedigree, the performance information, all of that other data. Okay? Any Angus breeders in the room? You guys will care about this. On Friday morning, we're releasing calibration 3. So we have been through two calibrations. Currently, the second calibration of the HD50K technology from Zoetis is being used. It was trained on about 12,000 animals. Okay. On Friday morning, we have retrained the algorithm or how that genomics goes into the EPDs on almost 40,000 animals. So the effect of the genomics may change a bit on Friday morning, and that's pretty exciting. Take home message for you guys, okay? If you are buying an Angus bull who has this genomics on board, what does that mean to you? Okay? It means that if you're looking at calvinies direct, it means you're buying that bull with the confidence that he has already sired 22 calves bred to Angus heifer, or bred to first calf heifers. Okay? So in other words, we have progeny records on 22 of his calves for that trait. Okay, how about something like our growth traits? We see 19 there for weaning, 23 for yearling. That's like he's sired 19 calves already, and we have weaning weights already on those 19 calves. Okay, so on the bull side, you're getting a good jump on a first calf crop before you ever buy the bull. That's the level of confidence in the EPDs. Or on the female side, it's the more than a lifetime's worth of natural calves on the female side. Okay, so the genomics is really powerful and has been a really valuable tool for us. Also, Angus breeders in the room, if there are any of you, we had not genomically enhanced heifer pregnancy before. On Friday morning, it will be. So we've had enough phenotypic information come in, enough genomic information. We've now trained the algorithm to have a prediction for heifer pregnancy as well. Okay. Heifer pregnancy is one of those percentage ones as well, for those of you that haven't used it before or maybe haven't looked at it, okay? So it's higher EPDs are more favorable again, okay? So we're using it to increase our chances of more pregnant daughters out of these bulls. So for example, in our 10 on bull A and our 3 on bull B, the difference is 7. So if you're breeding those bulls to 100 heifers, we're expecting 7 more pregnant daughters out of bull A than compared to bull B. That makes sense? So bigger's better here. All right? So that kind of wraps up my discussion of the Angus selection tools. Granted, the seed stock industry is 3%, okay, of the beef cattle. But remember I told you at the start of my talk, our goal and our purpose at AGI is to provide genomic selection tools and genetic selection tools for the beef industry, meaning all of this. Okay, so if you are buying Angus bulls or using Angus genetics, you're using genetic selection tools. Kent is going to get up here in just a minute and talk about now how we are taking the genomics piece or the DNA selection, and it's something that's been done primarily here up to this point, and now we are actually moving that into this sector and leveraging the information that we have gleaned because Angus breeders have grabbed on to the DNA, the genomic selection tools and run with it. We're now able to offer some tools to commercial breeders as well. So I think I'm going to hush, and we'll take questions at the end, if I remember right. So I'll turn it over to Kent and chat with you guys later.
Thanks, Tanya. And yes, we are going to have questions at the end.